Hello, this is Loretta Bertelot at the Tulsa Historical Society and Museum. The date is April 4th, 2024. And I have two ladies here from the Assistance League, Pat Benzoff.
Benzoff,
thank you. And Brenda Dinan. And they're going to tell about the Assistance League.
Tulsa.
Yes. Hi there. My name is Brenda Dinan, and I am the current president of Assistance League of Tulsa. And as just quick background on the Assistance League, we are one of 120 chapters of the National Assistance League. We were founded in 1970, which we'll talk a lot more about in a moment. But we are currently comprised of 290 volunteers. Everyone in our organization is a volunteer. And our mission is quite simple. It is to
transforming lives.
Transforming lives by strengthening community.
Right.
Got it. So, Pat, do you want to talk about how we started?
Oh, okay. Well, we started. Ruthie Martin moved to Tulsa from California, where she'd been an active member in the Assistance League in California. And so she decided that we needed to start something like that here in Tulsa. And so I didn't know if you wanted dates and so forth like that.
Yeah, that's
an
fine.
Invitational tea was held on February 14th, 1967, with the representative of National Assistance League present. And then 80 ladies decided to join that day.
Where did you draw those ladies from?
Well, these ladies were kind of from the high society of Tulsa back in the good old, the oil boom days.
It definitely started more of a social,
yes,
focused organization. To join, you had to know, you had to get references.
It was from two people. Two people had to sponsor you, and they even asked, like, have you been to their homes, inside their home? And so you had to have somebody vouch for you.
So this was 1967.
Yes. 1967.
So oil was still doing well in Tulsa.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And so then on March 7th, 1967, the National Assistance League allowed us to become, and so we became Assistance Guild of Tulsa. And that's where you got the guild part.
Okay.
And so we had to perform a philanthropic program of some sort to become a member. And so the ladies decided that we would, because a lot of the foreign students were coming over here from, like, to go to school at Tulsa, TU, and then Spartan School of Business, and
Oral Roberts,
some of those things. And so TU had a house on their, kind of close by, on their property. And they rented it to us for like $25 a month. And so, but our members and their husbands, they went in and kind of did some of the repairs for us. And it started out as the Friendship House. And so this was mostly for the students coming over, international students coming over. And so we had this house available where they could just kind of mix and mingle and kind of get to know other people and they had like a ping pong table. They'd have ping pong tournaments, but it was open from like 8 o'clock till I think it was 10 o'clock during the week, and then on the weekends they stayed open till midnight. But two members always had to be there anytime they had any functions, and so they would. That's how they did some of their volunteer work. There was no alcohol allowed in there, and they didn't lease it out or anything like that. But they could come and just kind of read or relax or whatever they wanted to do. And then a lot of the members, they would give up for the international students. They would actually give them, the women would give them like English lessons. And they did such things as, it kind of threw me when I said, with their wives. And I was going, okay, I guess they would have had wives back then. But anyway, they had like a monthly tea for the wives. Just to kind of get them acclimated into our customs compared to theirs. And then they had various social events, like they'd take them to the ballet. Matter of fact, there was one of the ballerinas. That's when I stopped to look at it. Where was she? Was one of the
and a lot of well, Pat looks for a lot of the things was just simple as like how to use the post office, how to go to the library, taking them to the grocery store. So it was really just welcoming international students into our community. But they did things as couples. They did it with, because the international students, a lot of them were married, and husbands and wives did joint activities together.
And members would babysit for them.
Okay.
Things like that.
Okay.
And they would provide them with maps. And sometimes they'd actually kind of help them, like, go find jobs, things like that. It was amazing.
So to call that a philanthropic program today, it's interesting because it's just great kindness, but that's really how it started, was just being kind to those that were new and in need of some Oklahoma love, I guess.
Okay, for our foreign students and their wives.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it said, going through some of the notes, it said over 300 people used it monthly.
That's a lot.
I know. But they had them from all over, like India, all kinds of places over there. And so they had a tickets for students program, too, where if they had, like, theater tickets or ballet tickets or anything like that, they would give them to the foreign students to go and just, for the cultural event of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we started there, and then it evolved into the beginnings of what we would call our signature program, Operation School Bell, which actually started in its earliest beginnings in 1968, and it simply was helping students with clothing, but it was very informal. It was a lot of members just giving their own gently used items or procuring items for the students, but it was very informal.
Were you still focusing on the foreign students?
No, this moved into Tulsa High School students.
Yeah, the Central, Webster, and Hill High Schools.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And
did you discontinue the hospitality house?
It continued
students?
On.
Even after we became Assistance League Tulsa, it kind of continued on.
Okay.
But I know, like, back then, it made a note that in 1968, one of the young ladies was named Miss Central High School, and she needed some clothing for it. And so one of the members just made sure she had an outfit to wear. And then they decided that, she needs to go on to school, so they got her a scholarship, provided a scholarship to OSU. And she needed items, clothing for freshman orientation, and so they kind of helped her with that. So, but it wasn't a formal program. It was just some of the members giving, out of the generosity of their hearts, giving the items to the students.
So you were at 80 members then?
Yes.
Okay.
And it also said that we were, I'll have to find it, but of the 47 chair assistance leagues that they had back then, ours was the only one that focused on foreign students. And so that was kind of a novelty, and I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I wonder if that has a lot to do with the fact that we were the oil capital and you were bringing people in from,
especially like for Spartan and some of those schools.
So we still were.
Yeah, because Spartan and TU's petroleum program and Oral Roberts with the ministry.
Right.
And you mentioned one other. I can't think of what it. There was a fourth one. Anyway, so yes, I think it did have to do with the oil industry.
Yeah.
here it is. It was besides the students program that we started for the members, you know, about giving them tickets to the things.
Mm-hmm.
It said that, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Moiseline
Larkin. Jasinski.
Mm-hmm. American ballerina and one of the Five Moons.
Mm-hmm.
And Native American ballerinas from Oklahoma, she offered free dance lessons to the husbands and wives that wanted to take it weekly.
Wonderful.
And that was just out of, out of the generosity of her heart. She just donated it. And so it was amazing. And
in 1969, we became an official chapter. So we moved from a guild to becoming an actual chapter.
January 20th, 1970. It said we were approved back then.
Our charter was official January 20th.
Because we had to get the bylaws together.
Yes.
Our famous bylaws.
Yes.
We had to get all the bylaws together and get everything signed and national approve it. And so it didn't, quote, officially become till
1970, which is interesting. So if we think of what, 50 years later, the in 2020, the last real event we had as Assistance League Tulsa before we shut down for the pandemic was our 50th anniversary celebration.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the last big hurrah we had. And then we kind of didn't see each other for most of the next 6-8 months.
Yeah.
Although we continued throughout the pandemic.
Right.
We did every one of our philanthropic programs.
Okay.
We just did it from a distance.
Of course, the kids were not in school, so they didn't need uniforms.
They didn't, but we, because of how we provide, we actually had already secured the clothing. And so while they weren't in school, we still packed bags and got them to the students. So the students still received clothing during that time. It just was done a little differently.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so there again, we just learned to adapt. And that's one great thing about our organization is we just kind of learn and adapt. Okay, well,
very
that
flexible.
Didn't work, so we're going to do this. And so it just kind of continued. And it's funny how it just evolved over the years and it started out. I know before, like I said, they were donating their clothes. And then eventually what they did, and it kind of started like the bargains, the members would donate some gently used clothing from, you know, their closets or anybody else. And then they had it set up in the parking lot of TU, and they sold it for $5. And so that's kind of how they raised some of their money to start funding some of these things. And I know one thing I found interesting in going back through the history, we were talking about, I can just imagine coming over from a foreign country and learning all about having to learn English and just the customs and all that. And so one of the students, he was from India, and he prepared a curry dinner for some of the members and stuff like that, and was teaching it, and to get them used to, like, their cuisine, because they kind of had a hard time. It said, like, because they did throw Thanksgiving and Christmas parties and stuff, and they said they had a little bit of trouble adapting to our food.
Oh, but that's different. Nice that it went both directions.
Yeah. And he actually then, in the notes, it says 10 years later, he did become a U.S. citizen. And so that was kind of interesting. And should we go into about Betty Bradstreet?
Oh, we can. So one of our Tulsa-specific, back up for a second, to be a member, a charter member of Assistance League National, everyone has to have a Operation School Bell program.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk in more detail in a minute about what that means. But that is a requirement. You have, and you do it how it works in your community, but you must have an Operation School Bell philanthropic program. So then after that, you have the ability to do whatever unique programs you wish to do. And a lot of us we borrow ideas from each other's chapters.
Mm-hmm.
But a unique one that we have in Tulsa is called the Betty Bradstreet Arts Education Awards. And that one is near and dear to us because it was mm-hmm. named for one of our past presidents. You want to tell about Miss Betty?
Yeah. So it was one of the articles I found, it was in May 8th, 1974. And it surprised me at first because everyone was referred to as Miss you know, it was by their husband's name. Mm-hmm. And very rarely did you see the women's first names, but in this case, but it was Mrs. Loring Betty Bradstreet was honored as Woman of the Year at the Ultra Club of Tulsa at the Harvard Club. And the women's community chose Miss Bradstreet for her many activities in the field of arts and humanities. She was president of Assistance League from 73 to 75, a board member of Tulsa Opera and Tulsa Civic Ballet, and active in the Women's Association of Tulsa Philharmonic, the Ballet Guild, Opera Guild, the Tulsa Metropolitan Auditions Committee, and a patroness of Sigma Alpha
Iota.
And she was a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution, a life member of the Tulsa County Historical Society, and a sustaining member of the Junior League of Tulsa. Her honors also included Woman of the Year Award in 1963 from the American Women in Radio and Television, received jointly with ballerina Yvonne Shoto, mm-hmm. and a citation from Mrs. Richard M. Nixon for outstanding and dedicated volunteer service to the community and the nation on May 13, 1971. So obviously she was all involved in all the arts and so forth. And one of the members that had, she built a special friendship with Betty. And it said that then when she passed away, she set up this endowment.
Yeah. So the Emma R. Showman Trust set up an endowment gift to Assistance League when she passed in 2005. Mm-hmm. And it was at the discretion of the board of how they thought that they should spend the money. It was a very, very generous gift. And the board that was in place at that time thought they would best honor Betty by doing something with the arts.
For Tulsa Schools.
For Tulsa Schools. And so that program, we give awards to teachers in all of Tulsa County schools that are in the fine arts. And
not just TPS schools, it's the surrounding areas too.
So
even private schools?
Not private schools.
Just public schools.
The public schools in Tulsa County, mm-hmm. Elementary through high school, and the teachers present award applications. And this year we awarded, I don't even know how much, you have to do the math, but each teacher could get up to $2,000 for something for their classroom. And we gave out $75,000 of awards for the fine arts because we felt like, one, that was a great way to honor Betty Bradstreet, but also because that's an area that doesn't always get a lot of love.
Funding.
Yeah.
That's right. I was just hearing yesterday on the news that some of the schools, not here, but they're thinking about eliminating arts again.
I know. And so we continued it on. And I know I just went last Friday, to one of the schools, and it was so interesting what the teacher did. It was for Tulsa Met, and it was for some junior and senior high school students. And they made these, we provided the money for them to buy these leather bracelet type things, and so they etched them on there and then could decorate them any way that they liked. And she had different fonts for him, but it was, "You matter to me," because they want to build self-esteem in them. And so it was for, and we gave them enough that they could then pass them out to the other kids in the class, mm-hmm. or anybody that they wanted to, just go up and let them know that, "Hey, you matter to me," and it's a way for self-esteem. But we go to the schools and see and participate. In this case, we got to actually do our own little bracelets. But you get to see what they're doing and encourage the kids. The kids are always so excited when you go in there, and you just kind of ooh and ah what they're doing. But it's really interesting because they like to show off what they've done.
Which school was that? Do you remember?
Tulsa Met was the one that we went to.
Tulsa Met.
It's a Tulsa Public High School.
Right.
It's a bit of an alternative mm-hmm. option.
Oh,
school.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she said a lot of these kids.
And they're very artistic sometimes.
Yeah, and they had had a lot of trauma in their past life, or I mean, you know, early years. And so it was just a way to affirm them. Mm-hmm. But we get band instruments for them. You know, it all depends. Art supply, all kinds of art supplies.
Purchase costumes for performances. Mm-hmm. And part of the award is that we come back and see how it's used in the
right.
classroom, or if we're invited to the production, or we go to art shows.
I like that you're following up to see what happened with
and
it.
And it's just, you said the funding for the arts can be down on the list often on its priority. And so, you know, we talk often to teachers that when they get a new classroom, they open their cupboards and there's nothing there. And, you know, they're starting, they have to build their own, you know, supply closet. Yeah. And so we've done all sorts of kilns and...
like the I was go back to the tennis shoe.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that teacher came in and the principal told him, I said, sorry, but your budget is zero. And it was just whatever supplies they had left. And so he reached out and applied for a grant, and so we gave him the money for all this paper. He was going to make a paper mache tennis shoe, and it was actually at the Field Book for a while there.
Yeah, it was a giant, like
Nike. Giant. I mean, they did the design, everything on it. It was amazing. I got
they
to,
had that
I got
in
to
the paper.
That.
I did
yes,
see
it was in the paper.
And so that we funded that.
Oh, right. Okay. But things like that, and so it's continued to grow, and that's another one that one of the projects that's kind of dear to us.
Do you present that just one time a year, or is that an ongoing thing when there's a need?
So we have the application process open in the fall, and we try to make all the awards by October, so that way the teacher knows they have it for the year to plan their curriculum for the year. And then we ask that it gets spent in that same year. So by this, we're doing lots of school visits right now to wrap up the year.
They kind of wrap up like the end of all. April.
Yeah.
But I know it just said in here about art education helps students develop a better understanding of other subjects, thereby strengthening academic skills. It fosters critical thinking skills, self-esteem, and creativity. So it's very much needed.
Yeah. So we touched briefly on Operation School Bell. Maybe we should delve into that.
Because that's our signature
that
program.
Is, yes. So that started in September of 77, and it really started with just going through the lost and found, laundering the items, repairing the items, and returning those to the school for the children's use. And so, limited budget.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And at that time, we were located at the Lincoln Elementary School, and they called us the Saints of the 70s. Because where the clothing was stored was in a non-air-conditioned space on the second floor, which they considered a rite of passage for the provisional members to work up there in the un-air-conditioned space.
Trying to think where Lincoln School was.
That was the one over, like, I think of it being where the Chimneys at 15th and...
Peoria.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I was drawing a blank on that. Okay. So you're saying you took the lost and found clothing and took it, cleaned it, and took it back to the same school?
Mm-hmm. And, well, they cut a storage at that place, and they would distribute it to the other schools. Mm-hmm. And really, there's a lot of other history that goes in behind that, but that really, that is really who we are known to be today.
How do you distribute the clothing today?
Today.
You want to do that now or later?
Yeah, so maybe we can go back and forth on. But so today we have, Operation School Bus has expanded to six different components. The first of which, as a general overview, we serve Tulsa County, all public schools in Tulsa County that we consider quote-unquote qualifying schools, and how we determine that is we look at the child nutrition report for the free and reduced lunches, and we set a parameter that we're going to work with every school over X%. we are not at this point able to do non-TPS high schools and middle schools. That we just haven't, we don't have the budget or the workforce yet to do that. So we work with all elementary schools in Tulsa County that meet our percent threshold. And then we actually work with every single TPS school today. So our first component, we start the school year off with giving two uniform shirts to every child in Tulsa Public Elementary Schools that are our qualifying schools.
On free lunches, is that your quality
line? Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And so this past year it was...
and they're delivered to the school.
So all schools that had a free or reduced lunch rate above 35%, every student was offered two shirts. We had some schools who had leftovers from the prior year, and but that was our threshold is... So every kiddo, at least 2 days a week, would have a shirt taken care of. And this is in Tulsa Public.
Because they wear uniforms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that uniform component allows us to do that mass.
So you're doing just the children in that school that qualify?
No, every child.
Every child in that school.
Yes.
And you're sending the shirts to the schools at this point?
Yes.
Okay. You used to do it a little differently, but I'm sure you'll get to that too. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. And so that's the one component. Uh-huh. And so that way we reach every single child. We don't look at income levels. It's just every kid. Last school year, which we have the numbers for, we distributed almost 30,000 shirts. So that's 15,000 children who received a shirt. It's quite a few shirts.
It is. It's a lot of children in need.
Yeah. Yes. So that's the uniform shirts is our first component. Our second, we'll leave on-site till the end because that's our largest. Our second component is what we call our off-site OSB. And that is how we meet the needs for children that are in non-TPS schools. And so for that, it's we still have a threshold of how we identify schools. But we invite students to a Walmart store that's near their home. And they come with a caregiver after school. And each child gets $100 to purchase items that are school-appropriate clothing items.
We give them a list of what's allowed and what's not allowed.
Mm-hmm. And if there is a family that they have multiple children at that elementary school, we make sure that every child from that family gets included. So there's no hard feelings at home. And so for that program, we will issue this next year 1,800 invitations. And the children get to have a shopping trip that is a yes. You know, that's not, Mom, we can't afford this, we can't do this. It's a yes. It's, you want this shirt? Well, we'll get that shirt. You get, so it's kind of a unique experience mm-hmm. for some children to have a trip that's truly focused on their selecting items they wish to get.
And we always have some members there, like they check in when we check them in. And then also when they're going through the checkout line, we have them there to make sure that the items that they're getting are...
That was my next question. Yep. Okay, so you have feet on the ground with that too. Okay.
Yep. And we stand to the... We Walmart, the stores are very good to work with us. They give us a dedicated register for the mm-hmm. evening. So we sit there with our, you know, assistance like debit card and just swipe, swipe, swipe. But what I've always been proud of how we've done it, it's very much with dignity for the family. It is done where it's a big issue isn't made out of the fact someone else is paying for it because the family members go through the line with mm-hmm. us. And so I would say that that the children don't realize necessarily that it is not Mom, Grandma, Dad
right.
paying for the items. I personally had an experience. It was the first time that we had done offsite during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it was still 2020 though, because we went ahead and we put on masks and
gloves
behind
and sanitizer.
Plexiglass, and we went into the community and we still met the needs. And a father came in with his three kiddos, and he was angry and not very kind as we checked his family in. And we try to be very upbeat, mm-hmm. and we want to make it a fun experience, but there is some protocol we have to do with how we make sure that anyone that's come in the store, we've checked them out before we leave, and, you know, we make sure go through the list of the appropriate items. Before the kids leave, they get to pick out two books that mm-hmm. we bring in, so we want to make sure that they know about the books. And the father was just gruff. And off he went to shop, and the kids came through, and we love to make a big to-do about the kids' purchases. Right. Oh, those boots are going to be amazing. Oh, what a beautiful mm-hmm. dress. Just really try to make them feel really, you know, confident and proud of the items they've purchased. And we were...
Don't make them feel like it's charity.
It's... Because it's not. It's... Right. It's a... We all, you know, have different points in our life where we've all needed whatever kind of helping hand. And the dad gets through and they're leaving and he comes and he points at me and he said, "I need to talk to you." And big gulp, because I knew he was... upset early in the evening, and he pulled me aside and said that he didn't want to be there that night, that he had never accepted charity for his family before. He wasn't someone who couldn't take care of his family, but because of COVID, he had lost his job. And he, I get teary every time mm-hmm. I talk about it, because he said, "I'll pay you back. But you made my family feel good. You didn't make me feel like a loser. You made my kids' night, mm-hmm. and I'm going to pay you back."
See, it tears me up, too.
And I said, don't pay us back. You pay it forward. And that was that moment where you realize it's all about the dignity of the people we serve, we work with, mm-hmm. because it is a, I get teary every time I tell that story, because it was so difficult for his pride to come in that night. But he knew he needed to for his family. But we made sure he felt mm-hmm. great when he left.
Yeah, me tearing too.
That's my favorite.
That's our goal.
Thank you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. So
that keeps us doing what we're doing.
Yes. So our offsite program runs through the Walmart stores. We do that really quick. We usually start that September 15th. We're done by really November 1st, usually. We have teams that go out. We usually do... two different Walmart locations mm-hmm. Every Tuesday, Thursday through that time period, and serve 1,800 children with the things they need.
And the schools are not using uniforms as much now, right?
Well, so the non-TPS, none of the ones we work with have uniforms.
So they can get just regular clothes.
Okay.
Yes. And so.
Takes a little more time.
Yeah.
So then that's our offsite. Mm-hmm. Then we have make sure I'm counting all the components correctly. We have started this past year personal care closets. Mm-hmm. And we have those established in over 75 elementary schools mm-hmm. Across Tulsa County. So all of the schools that either participate in off-site or on-site, and we'll delve into on-site in a minute, we provided dollars through a virtual store. And so someone at the school has access to this virtual store. It's kind of like our own little...
We get them a budget. We say, okay, you have X number of dollars to spend. And so we have just different items that we have in the store that they can go purchase. And so before we were trying to give them like these little kits that had like shampoo, toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant. I don't even think we had deodorant in there, but some items.
Soap.
And we're just shipping them or delivering them to the schools. And they might not, but there again, it was only the students that came either to our off-site program or our on-site program. And so not every kid in the school had access to those items. And so how can we improve this? And so we came up with the virtual store. And we give them the money. We give them a budget amount. And so they are able then to go in and purchase the items that they need for that school. So it's tailor-made for them. And this is the first year we've done it, but it so far has been a huge success. But that way, if they want to spend it all on deodorant, because we did a survey, and come to find out the top items that they wanted was deodorant and feminine products for the girls, which we didn't even think about because
they're elementary students.
They're elementary students, but they're starting their periods.
Their bodies are changing.
Their bodies are changing. Mm-hmm. So those were some of the top items. And so we go through and made sure. And so they're able to order them. And then so we don't have to deliver them, which is what we were having to do before. These are delivered directly then to the schools, which each school now pretty much has a clothes closet. And so they get whatever items they need.
So they have a counselor, a PTA person,
right,
someone who's taking care of the ordering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that way, we don't know what other relationships they have in the community. I mean, they might have a dentist who gives every kid a toothbrush. Well, we don't need to be giving toothbrushes.
Right.
And so it allows them to customize it for their particular site's needs. Mm-hmm. So we do personal care for elementary. For high school, we only work right now with Tulsa Public High Schools, high school and middle schools. But we do, this year, we actually serve every single middle and high school in Tulsa Public. And that is a factor of each one reaching our threshold of what we consider a qualifying school. And so we have members that are liaisons that work directly with the schools. And they work with a school counselor, a parent mm-hmm. facilitator, someone the school identifies, and just meets the needs that school has. It can be uniform pants. It can be spirit shirts, hygiene items. It's really focused on that school's particular need.
Some of them need like special calculators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... And so each one has a different budget that we set to purchase those items for the students.
So that probably goes through administration?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we have, and then we have, okay, so we've talked about offsite. We've talked about the...
Also.
Scholarship. The uniform. We talked about that. So then, yes. So a new program that we started...
Two years ago.
We've learned that students from Tulsa Public that are enrolled concurrently in Tulsa Community College, they get their tuition taken care of, they get their books taken care of, but the student is still responsible for the fees. And the fees on the coursework could range anywhere from $100 to $200. Mm-hmm. And that can be a barrier for a student to get their college credits. And so we now pay for, we have a budget, we can't pay for.
No.
But we spend $40,000 a year covering the course fees for students concurrently enrolled at TCC.
Now that's not their tuition.
No.
That's just calculators
that's already
and art materials or whatever.
The Regents pay for the tuition, the Foundation for Tulsa Schools pays for their supplies, but there is just a fee associated with the coursework. That
so we actually work with TPS and Foundation for Tulsa Schools, and they decide which students qualify. And so we're not having to make that decision. So then they send us a list of who they applied it to. And so, I mean, it's varied courses that they're all taking. It's amazing. And we go on a couple of site visits, you know, to kind of talk to the students. And
that's for concurrent enrollment when they're doing TCC plus high school.
Mm-hmm. But that gets them through college a little bit quicker.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so sometimes they can knock off a couple of years.
Plus it's been basically free.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that encourages them to go on.
Yeah.
And so that's another one, because we try to focus on the kids.
Is that focused more on certain schools? Because some school, well, I guess with all the busing around, it wouldn't just state.
We cover almost all of them.
Yeah, it's offered to, and it's offered to every TPS high school.
Right.
Okay.
And so if students aren't in, and that has been a big push for the school too, is to take advantage of that concurrent mm-hmm. enrollment.
Right.
If you can knock a year of college or year and a half out for free.
Like 20,000 in the fall and then like 20,000 in the spring. So they can actually apply two times.
Okay. You got one more, I guess. You said you got six. That's five of them.
Okay, so then, six?
The big one.
The big one is number six, and that is our Operation School Belt On-Site Program.
Okay.
And this is the one that is just so exciting.
Which, come to find out, it's pretty unique. I assumed everybody did it the way we did, and they don't.
So similar, we identify, this coming year, we're going to have 1,800 invitations that go out to qualifying schools. And so we do it on a percent basis, a little bit of math involved of how many invitations each school gets. The school identifies the children that are would most benefit from coming to the Operation School Belt on-site. It's a field trip for the students. They come during the school day. We pay for the busing, so they come on a TPS bus, but we reimburse the district for the cost. They come in the morning, and our members, and then we have also community volunteers that participate.
Mm-hmm.
The children are treated to a personal shopping experience, and they come into our building, and one-on-one, they get taken back into our storeroom. They have their own shopping cart. And they get to pick out, they get two complete school uniforms. And so whether it's the pants, the jumper, the skirt, the shirts, they get a brand new pair of shoes, socks.
Everything's brand new. It still has the tags on them.
Yes.
So they're not getting leftovers.
Yeah. That's.
Do you get warned ahead about what sizes to have, or do you just keep a stock?
We just keep a stock. That's one of the challenges because
especially shoes.
Yeah, because we know we're serving when we in the long the lead time is we're buying now for next fall, and putting orders in, and you're
guessing.
We know we need 1,800 and some combination of girl, boy, kindergartner, fifth grader. We don't know.
We take them pre-K. Mm-hmm. Like 3 years old up to, in our building, fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. So I get new shoes, cool. New socks, new undergarments, an everyday outfit, a winter coat, sweatshirt.
Mm-hmm. And then they also get, underwear.
Yeah.
And then they get two books, two brand new books that they write their name in so they know that it's theirs.
I'm glad you added the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Literacy is another one for us.
Yeah, literacy is a big component.
I had one little girl, and when I was taking her back, and I said, okay, we're going to go pick out some clothes. She goes, I get to pick out? I said, yeah, you get to pick out. And she goes, but my mom always does that. I said, well, today you get to do it. And she just perked up then and pushing the cart. And,
or they'll say, I didn't bring any money.
Oh, yeah, I had one.
And it's like, it's okay, this one's on us. It's going to be a good day.
But these are uniforms.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's why we're able to do it.
But we also give them like a play outfit, too. So we give them the uniforms and the shirts. But we also give them like a play uniform. We just call not uniform, but a casual outfit.
And whether for a weekend or some schools have free dress days.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they have something that they can do on those days. And
Does Walmart give you a break on that?
You know what? We order those wholesale.
Okay.
Yeah. So we go direct to the wholesaler.
That's even better.
Yes. So we love to say, though, that we, you know, a significant way we raise funds is through our Bargains Thrift Shop. And so we love that we sell mm-hmm. used things to buy students brand new things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a beautiful turn of events. So those are big. So, and then every elementary school from Tulsa Public that comes to the on-site, they receive also items to stock their clothes closet with uniform pants. So we send a sundry of uniform pants. And then we have what we call high and dry bags. And those are for the pre-K and K classrooms. And it's anything that might get damp in an accident. And so that the student immediately has something they can dry, they can put on, and get right back into the classroom without embarrassment.
So that goes directly to the schools?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just pack up some big bags of things to head to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the goal is to not have the student embarrassed because they've just sat in the office in wet clothing until somebody maybe can get away, and they get right back into the classroom and don't miss that necessary instruction time. And that's a fairly new program, mm-hmm. but it's been so well received. We love that component, and it's a cute little name too.
And so this is all done by volunteers. We get the items in, we hang them up.
Process. Do all, yeah. So it looks like right now it's pretty empty because toward the end, we're, like I said earlier, we're a May 31 year end. So we're trying to get rid of as much. So at this point, we're doing, we call it SOS.
Stock our schools.
And so we take the things and we offer up to the different schools. We have uniform pants left. We have coats left. What items would you be able to use at this point? And
the orders
bags
are
going
in.
Out like crazy.
Oh, so you just clean out the storeroom.
Yep. And start over come June 1. We'll start. We actually have already started getting orders. But yeah. And so that's our signature program. And it's obviously, it's huge. We do have a number of other philanthropic programs where we work with other community partners, mm-hmm. Such as Life Senior Services. And for Life Senior Services, we provide, like this year we did Christmas stockings for some of their clients that may not have family to get Christmas presents. We do tote bags full of household supplies for some of their homebound clients. And then we also work off a wish list to do, this year I think mm-hmm. we're doing art supplies again for some of their day centers to provide activities mm-hmm. For their clients. For Mental Health of Oklahoma, we work with some of their living groups here.
One year we did mattresses or something like
yeah.
that. Because a new building that they were going to have for the when they transition to having their own apartment.
Mm-hmm. We help Yale Apartments mm-hmm. with welcome baskets for their new residents. We did holiday stockings
right.
For a couple of their living groups. And then we also do like gifts of picnic tables or an umbrella or something to some of their living centers. A relatively new program, but it's one that our members particularly love. It's,
oh, yes,
our relationship with STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education is so big. And we work with Tulsa Regional STEM Alliance to come up with kits to give to the schools. And so these are little Ziploc bags with everything a child needs to do the science experiment or math game or whatever it is. And so we prepare these STEM in a bag kits and distribute those to different schools. And we're all over Tulsa County, and that's just to support the STEM education. And we really focused this past year mm-hmm. on a lot of the rural schools that have somewhat often less resources. But now we're moving into Tulsa Public Schools, and it's just a nice add to a teacher's curriculum. It's also good during times when they're working. They've told us when they're working one-on-one or with a smaller group, they can have their students work on these projects, or maybe they can go home as a project.
And their families can help
mm-hmm.
them.
And so STEM is a very, and our members love it because they sit around and assemble them and chat and have snacks and have.
But it's a good way for some of the members who can't necessarily stand all day, like when we're dressing kids and stuff, that they can't do that, or they don't necessarily want to, but they can sit then and, like I said, just chat and get to know the other members. It's a good, and they enjoy doing it. We never have any problems filling that. We just say, okay, we're going to assemble kits, and you'll get like 20 or 30 ladies that will show up.
And they'll put out 6,000 kits in an afternoon
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
So that's a fairly new, but it's a very well-received program. And so we're constantly evolving and changing. And we've previously worked with Emergency Infant Services and Fostering Connections. When they were a little bit more, not struggling, but newer entities, and helped them get established. And now that relationship is evolving into a little bit different mm-hmm. relationship, And so we just have, we constantly are talking with our members, where do you find joy and engagement, and making sure that our programs mm-hmm. not only serve the community, but also serve our members and their interest. Funding.
Yeah, you saw me write down a dollar sign.
So where does all this
where does that come from? So we have a few funding sources. The first is the Bargains Thrift Store, mm-hmm. and it's insane. I mean, just the...
It's kind of like they call it the Neiman Marcus of thrift stores. Have you been there?
Just once.
Oh.
It is so well done and so clean, and our members take such great care of the items. And nothing goes onto the floor that hasn't been cleaned or shined or made sure it works, or we take great pride in what we sell.
And you even have like pieces of art and
yes.
jewelry.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. I did do a good overlook the day I was in there.
Furniture.
The quality of what you get is mm-hmm. fantastic.
We get a lot of it from estate sales.
Uh-huh.
And people, they when they hear about our mission, and it's easy to make that decision to donate to our
yes.
thrift store.
Right.
Maybe versus another. Our return to community this past year was 82%. We have very limited overhead as an all-volunteer organization. And so they know when they donate to us, it's going to go to our programs and
okay.
our and the children.
And you said you get them from estate sales. You mean you don't buy them from estate sales?
No. They're donated.
Uh-huh.
We'll
yeah.
work with a lot of different estate sales where
mm-hmm.
they say at the end, would you like to
sure.
have what's left? And or some, they'll say, the family took what they want, we're going
right.
to give you guys the rest.
We've had a couple of those where I know I've done it. And especially like this one lady, she had like a whole library of books that had hardly been used. And so they actually came and delivered them to us just to get them out.
Delivery after delivery
I know.
After delivery.
Do you have some men who are helping you unload all these deliveries?
We do have a few men. And so we have men and women members. We are always say we're looking for a few good men because we definitely need some muscle strength at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... So the thrift store, we were Tuesday morning. I was up in the lobby and line was...
There's
out the
a
door.
Line
they,
out the door.
They're waiting
wait
on
to
Tuesdays
uh-huh.
at 10 a.m. to get in. And
what do you restock on Mondays?
Yes.
Okay.
So they kind of know that the new stuff is out there on Tuesday morning. So,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because yes. we come in, we're closed on Sundays in the building. But otherwise, we come in like Monday. And I know I work in linens, and so we'll wash things, sometimes iron things just to make it look a little more attractive.
You've got washers and dryers and irons.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about your facility.
Oh goodness.
Yes. Yeah, I know you're interested in that.
So we were approached by the Zaro Foundation about moving into Legacy Plaza as they were reimagining what to do with that very large property in the middle of town.
That used to be?
Dollar Thrifty.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we were offered the three-story standalone building that's on the far east of the property as a gift. And the only condition was you have to fundraise, do a capital campaign to do the build-out for the remodel of it. And Phyllis and George Dotson, Phyllis has been a longtime member, and she and George just ran with it and... very, very successful capital campaign and paid for 100% of the renovations necessary through a capital campaign. So I think we're one of the few lucky nonprofits in the world that, or in the United States, I guess, that own our own building debt-free, which we're very, very proud of.
Yes.
And grateful for.
And they turned that whole complex. Into nonprofits.
There were three
mm-hmm.
buildings.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So
everyone on the
us.
Complex has to be a nonprofit.
So about what square footage do you have? Do you have any idea?
We're about 30,000 square feet.
Okay.
Yes,
we have tenants that we rent the top floor to, Hearts for Hearing in Newview, Oklahoma. And so we have their space provides additional help with overhead cost. And so that's a good setup for us that, although we definitely could use the space, we thought, how are we ever going to outgrow the 20,000 or the 20,000? We'll never fill it. And now we're like, gosh, we sure wish we had that top
floor. But you like that income too.
We do like that income. That's hard to.
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
You've done such a good job. It just needs to keep expanding.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. We just need
it. So we have a lot of support in the community too. A lot of them stepped up and for the campaign and raised a lot of money. And like the Brandon Book Nook that we established.
Yeah, we have great community support through grants. We do a letter campaign every year that raises just, and it literally is that complicated. We send out letters and ask people to help fund
our
operations.
Back in the old days, they had these elaborate parties
mm-hmm.
where they would raise money. And it was amazing, some of the parties that they threw. I've seen some pictures and stuff. And I know one of their big fundraisers was a Fiesta Mexicali or something like that. And so that's how they would raise the money to provide some of the things. But most of the money there would go
back to the fundraiser.
Yeah, back to the fundraiser. So I think we
keep it simple.
Yeah. I think at the end of their first year, they had something like it was like $1,500 in the bank at the end of the year. But that was kind of a lot for back then.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had a good party.
But they weren't doing things in quite... And like I said, they were giving up their own items and stuff, too, so they didn't have a lot of overhead.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed at the generosity of the Tulsans.
Absolutely.
And to this day, still.
When you say there's a need... Mm-hmm. Somebody always writes a check.
Yeah. Yep. It's amazing that, and we were going through something recently, trying to make a decision, like, and I said, well, I don't want to be that nonprofit that's on TV saying we need, but the thing is in Tulsa, the needs are...
It's real.
Yeah. Well, and the generosity of the foundations and the individuals, like, it's incredible how giving this community is. We're having... a regional conference of Assistance League chapters in June. And so we're inviting people from, we have a Nebraska chapter, a couple of Missouri, Kansas, two others in Oklahoma, a bunch in Texas, and New Mexico.
Before it was just Texas, Oklahoma. It was like a regional thing. And so this year, National decided to expand it.
So we have quite 22 different chapters coming in June. And been working closely with our national organization through it, and
they just can't
get their head wrapped around Tulsa, and they're like, we're so excited to come visit Tulsa. And when they were concerned this one event, it's going to be 150 people ish that we're having it at the building, and is that going to be okay with the fire marshal? Are you going to have space? And I'm like, it's a really large facility. We're going to be just fine. And they're very excited to see Tulsa.
And they go, boy, you people drive a lot or something like
that.
Yeah,
they're like, they gave us a hard time because we were like, 500 miles, that's a good driving distance. And they're like, you guys just like to drive in the middle of America.
they don't understand our lifestyle.
No, not at all. But they're gonna get to see it. We're very excited to showcase Tulsa.
So that's going to be this summer?
Yes, mm-hmm. In June.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Yeah. So where will you have the big? You have a big.
We're going to have it at the Mayo, and so we're very excited to have it in the ballroom there. That's going to be pretty spectacular to show off the Mayo. And
it's funny because a lot of them have seen Tulsa King.
Yeah,
and bring that up.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
I meant to catch that before it did that. I'm sorry. Okay. Well. Okay, what other things do we want to make sure we get in this?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a great, you know, we like I said, we've had numerous different projects that we've done over time that have either evolved or changed. we hit on where we are today. A program that we actually received an award, a couple awards last year, but one that goes back to our thrift store that we're very proud of. We also want the community to know what good stewards we are. Every dollar and every donation that we get in bargains. And so we actually were awarded by the Tulsa Met as the Green Project of the Year for our Waste Not program. And so anything that comes into our thrift store, if we do not believe we can sell it, we make sure it finds a home. And so we work with 20, 30 mm-hmm. other nonprofits in the community. And our, the group that runs the donation area, they're incredible. Because even sometimes if they think, well, we could sell it, but we know they needs this more than what we could sell it for. Mm-hmm. They make that choice, and they're empowered to make that choice to get the items to the right partners. And so we feel like that unless it is truly just absolute trash, we will find it at home, even for rags. They either go to Medi Paws, which is a great organization that helps women that had been incarcerated and teaches them dog grooming, and that they need towels. That's where my dog goes to get his grooming.
We actually have a rag thing where they will they
turn them into stuffing or mulch or something. And we have a member who personally gets things sent overseas that mm-hmm. We can't use. And so we take great care with whether it's a financial contribution or an item to make sure that we're doing the best for the community with that.
Okay. Wow, and so you've got about, no, you started with 290.
No, we're 290 members today.
We started with 80.
Okay.
And we do fun activities. We sound like we're a whole lot of work, but we do...
with the fashion shows.
We do fashion shows with our bargains items. Mm-hmm. We have Halloween parties, holiday mm-hmm. parties. We put in last year as a collective group somewhere around 53,000 hours of volunteer work, 53,000 hours. And I would bet that's underreported by a ton because usually we don't stop to record our hours.
Uh-huh.
But we just like our friends and we'd like to be with each other. And
back in the day, because I was reading about that, and they were required to work 80 hours. And I was going,
hey, a year?
But it was a year.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm going, we do that in a day sometimes. Not a day, but like a week. Yeah.
It gets that way sometimes. You get caught up in what you're doing and you're enjoying it.
But, yes, just how much we've grown from the beginning and how we did. Because they kind of did things, like I said, they were working with the schools, but we've just evolved. It's evolved.
Yes, and you're touching many different areas.
Right.
As you've gone through the years
right.
and then even at a current year. How many different places you're involved in, and then you've got to have your social committee. So,
yeah, right. It is like
we have like a monthly chapter luncheon where uh-huh. we catch everybody up on what's going on, but then we have lunch afterwards, and so then you can sit there and talk to your friends, whatever.
And we have some members who have volunteered for years, and at this point, maybe physically. Coming to the luncheon is about all they can do, but it's their friends. And so we make sure we offer that, you know, friendship and that time. Because it's also ministering, you know, really back to our own members, too. That
right.
Well, you have a lot of volunteers. With so many women working now, is this number 290, is that less than what you may have had 20 years ago?
That's interesting. It doesn't really... evolve that much. It stays kind of at that,
mm-hmm.
but people working longer, it has become an issue on getting volunteers. And I've spent a lot of time talking to our national office about it, that across the country, committed volunteerism is at its all-time low. And it hasn't come back from COVID, that... people are hesitant to make the commitment, and then also the there's a lot of sandwich generation. That how do I fit a committed volunteerism into my life? And that's something we've been working mm-hmm. a lot on, is how do we make it work, the volunteer life balance.
Yeah. I can see some night hours with snacks. because the women working, I mean, you're working, you know, and then you still want that companionship time to seek it out someplace. Okay, well.
They did have, a long time ago, they had the primetime treasures, where some members would kind of make items of something and sell. Just going through some of the history. And
it was a big fundraiser that used to be in Jinx, and they had booths, like when, you know, Main Street Jinx mm-hmm. was all the antique stores, and it was that antique capital. And then as kind of crafts and things kind of tapered off,
right.
it became less profitable, and we had to shut that part of our, but that was how we also worked with Life Senior Services,
right.
is they would make items, and we would sell them in our primetime treasures.
It was like in 88, it says, and yeah. So, anyway, I'm happy to send you whatever you want, or photos, or...
Okay, let's just sign up, and we'll talk about that, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.